Welcome, KU football fans, to what I'm guessing will be an abbreviated edition of the KU Sports Hour. We might not live up to our title on this one. Might not quite reach those full 60 minutes, but we figured it's been a busy week. It's been a while since we've talked about football on the podcast with the bye week, and then because I was out of town that week, and then there was really nothing to react to after the bye week. So finally, we have something to react to, the Texas Tech game, which obviously did not go so great
right
for the Jayhawks down in Lubbock. So we'll talk a little bit about that, but mainly we wanted to answer your questions. A ton of great questions, as always, on Twitter, so appreciate that. Joining me for this is Tom Keegan. Tom, you didn't make the trip to Lubbock, which...
No, I didn't.
You've been to so many of these football games post-Mangino. Did it feel gratifying to not have to go to one and be able to just watch it on TV?
It was interesting to see the different side of it watching on TV, because I think that was only like the third road game I've missed since 2005. Maybe the fourth, but...
But yeah, I mean, you've been there for, by and large, every single one.
Right.
So, and you've seen so many losses in a row.
Yeah, I have. And... there is a certain sameness to it, you know. It's calling for another quarterback, or
right.
You know, why did he have to call another timeout? That kind of stuff. But I always would rather be there than not.
Yeah, and you got to be there for the Central Michigan win. I guess I should have said
yes.
Big 12 road losses.
Yes, to end the streak. That was certainly a fun game to cover, and. Man, you know, TCU comes in not at full strength here.
I know.
So who knows? Sean Robinson with a season-ending injury, and Kevontae Turpin, the number one playmaker, has been suspended.
Yeah. So, I mean, this it kind of feels like a winnable game. I mean, or maybe the most winnable game left is a better way to put it.
Right.
This three-week stretch, this is your shot if you're going to win any more this season. TCU coming in with two of its key offensive players out. Iowa State, I mean, I guess people always say Iowa State, but
right.
I'm just lumping Iowa State and K-State and TCU into like the lesser teams in the Big 12 this year, which they're all obviously better than KU.
Yeah, well, let me say this, though. We always say, well, here's their chance. And then but let me just say this. Two out of the three, let's remove K-State from the equation for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at the other two, and I agree with you that this is their best opportunity.
TCU.
TCU and Iowa State,
yes,
and K-State,
yes.
Are the... But let me remind you of what the combined score was when last year they played Iowa State and TCU on successive weeks. Do you remember what their combined score was?
Let's see if I can get it off the top of my head. Combined score. Was it like 97 to nothing?
I want to say 86.
Think that's right.
Yeah. 45 and 41, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Did I get those backwards? I don't know. And TCU, the total yards was 121. Was that right?
No, that was Iowa State.
Oh, 21.
Yeah, 21.
21. Yeah. That's right. I only missed that by 100.
That night where they were in negative yardage entering the fourth quarter.
Right. The night that Doug Meacham was staring at the box score for a good 20 minutes.
Just in complete disbelief. Yeah, so there is that.
Yeah.
There is. You should definitely remember that anytime you're talking about KU playing those teams. I guess let's bring up the question I asked her. I'll give you a little bit of context. Basically, earlier in the week, I tweeted out just some facts about where KU's at right now. After a bye and a midseason firing of the OC and quarterbacks coach, KU lost by 32 points, its largest margin of the season, at Texas Tech. And then I just asked for questions. So the first response came from Gonzi, and he just said, no comment. But
hey, we're talking about a football game, not the trial.
Right. Jake Hawk 20 asked, is Beatty playing Bender just to stick it to the fans before his exit?
No, of course not. That's absurd. He doesn't think that he's going to get fired, I don't think. And if he does, he certainly doesn't coach that way.
I mean,
But you know, I know where you came to that, because you've tried every other possible explanation.
Of trying to figure out why Bender has played. And I mean, Bender played the entire game, which was new for this season. And I almost wondered, like, as it was happening, like, is this Beatty just saying, like, all right, here's your last chance. We're going to give you the entire game.
Nope. You want to know what it was?
What was it?
It's Beatty saying, y'all, I was blamed for the quarterback shuffle. Right. See, it wasn't me.
That's right. Either way, just overreacting to something that you shouldn't care about whatsoever.
Right. Exactly.
The next question is from Steve in PV. I'm going to guess that's Prairie Village. I don't know. He just asks, why? Just why? I think people are just so tired of seeing the same thing over and over again. It gets a, I don't know, it's almost a sad response, but it's also a hilarious response.
And it was just in general. He wasn't asking about the quarterback. No, just in general. Just why? Why? How?
All the questions.
We know what.
Yeah. An account named Blind Justice asked, it seems we had talent that was misused only to transfer. And he brings up Montel Cozart, Ryan Willis, Jay Sternberger. And now they've played well at new schools. Who currently has not met the right talent to reps equation?
Wow, what a great question.
Yeah, I like that one. And
Dalen Charlotte.
I was about to say, that was the first one that comes to mind, and now he's finally kind of getting involved.
I think he's going to be involved a lot, because when you involve him a lot for the first time, he has a great game. This is also another way that Beatty can blame Meacham, that it was and Meacham didn't like Charlotte, it was clear. Maybe Beatty likes Charlotte, and why not give him credit for that until he proves otherwise?
Yeah, Dalen Charlotte had 4 catches for 67 yards against Texas Tech. Easily his best game since coming to KU. Not even close.
Right, and the one-handed, left-handed catch was spectacular. And he's big. He's fast enough. He's faster, I think, than some of the receivers, don't you?
Yeah.
Definitely faster than some of the receivers. And he's got good hands. He can make tough catches. I remember the spring game, he made a really good catch.
Oh, an insane one. Yeah, a couple of insane catches.
Right,
yeah.
And then the next spring game, he played well too, didn't he? Didn't he get a touchdown in there?
Well, there wasn't really a spring game, per se.
Oh, that's right. That's right. There was no spring game.
It was more of a bunch of guys doing drills.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I mean, Dalen Charlotte, people have been clamoring for him to play more.
Season and a half left to his career. This is exciting.
Yeah, that's good news if you're a KU football fan. You might actually get to see what this guy is capable of here in the next few weeks, and that bodes well then for next year.
And if he really, really does well, he could end up being NFL teammates with Chase Harrell.
Another guy who left. Yeah, well, we'll have to wait till next year to find out how good Chase Harrell is at Arkansas. I'm just going to go ahead and assume he'll be almost as good as Jay Sternberger is at Texas A&M.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, those two guys, Beatty just raved about both of them, like, from National Signing Day on and the kind of talent they had. And now we're seeing it with Sternberger. He's arguably the best tight end in the country for Texas A&M. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chase Harrell goes to Arkansas and ends up, you know, putting up huge numbers and being an athlete that's tough for defensive backs, even the SEC, to contend.
Right, although he did have a lot of drops. He's going to have to get better hands somehow. But what was that you said right before Chase Harrell? I was going to make a brilliant point. I forget. It was going to be amazing.
Oh, man. We'll have to somehow rekindle those words exactly, because I can't even remember what I was talking
about. Well, when I'm listening to the podcast, I'll
be sure to leave a comment or something. Sean Moore says, with 15 scholarships to fill for the next class. So let's stop right there. Do we think 15 is the number for 2019?
Or it might be on the high side. I'm going to say 12 to
12
15.
12 to 15, somewhere in that range.
Right.
Since they go out of their way not to make clear what they're doing exactly with scholarships, it's kind of hard to gauge, but that's a pretty good range.
Right.
So he's asking about the scholarships for 2019. If a new coach isn't hired until after the season, is it possible to get a quality recruiting class for 2019? Does that recruiting outlook change if a new coach comes in right now?
I'll tell you, if they stay with the existing coach, it's next to impossible, because everyone believes he's walking the plank, and even if he's brought back for another year, they believe he's gone. So why let it hurt you again? The new coach, you know, it depends where he comes from. Let's say he comes from North Carolina State and he can bring part of his recruiting class. North Carolina State, in the first full recruiting class under Dave Doran, so which would be last year, the seniors from last year, there were seven NFL draft choices, including four defensive linemen.
Oh, man.
Dave Doran knows how to evaluate, and he knows how to recruit. And I'm going to say particularly defensively, because that's the side of the ball he comes from. And that's the side of the ball that two of his recruits at KU played on, more than two, but the two that pop out as are Aqib Talib and James McClinton.
Wow.
And those are two guys who were phenomenal college football players. One of them never got the chance in the NFL, and the other's a phenomenal NFL player still to this day, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's got to be – I don't feel like – I think some fans kind of have entertained the idea of that being the route that maybe Jeff Long goes after at the end of this season, the Dave Doran route.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he's a name that – you hear a lot among the fan base, at least, but that would be an amazing hire if it were possible.
Right, and here's the stumbling block. He makes $3 million. He's got it really going there. But the buyout would be 4.5 after this year. Now it goes down after succeeding years. But so that's tough right there, although maybe, who knows, maybe David Booth wants this to really happen as long as his name is on the stadium and he steps up and says you can use this for coaches instead of for, you know, the new stadium.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty tricky to navigate for whoever ends up coming in, assuming David Beatty is fired after the season's over.
Right.
I mean, because you're in a tough spot scholarship-wise, and you don't have a lot of time to – so many inroads have been made already with recruits. It's hard to come in late on guys. I mean, I guess if you have a big enough name or you have a big enough reputation or ties with the right within the right regions of recruiting, you can make it happen or do what you can. But it seems like it's going to be a small recruiting class with potentially not a lot of star power to it.
Right. And then maybe there are some late bloomers
who
aren't part of the December or schools that just didn't have those openings. But you know, if you bring a new guy who has an entire staff, he brings with him just about, maybe he'll save a spot or two for Tony Hall, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They can steal those guys. A couple of the guys, they can steal them. There's
no law rules
against that. Yeah.
Yeah, no rules against it. Another question here from Blind Justice. He asks, regarding Beatty firing Meacham, in part for misuse of timeouts, burning a handful of fourth downs last weekend didn't seem like an improvement. Thoughts?
I think this is a very observant fan. That's what I think.
Yeah.
He noticed that he blamed. Yeah. Way to go.
Yeah, the timeouts at Texas Tech, they came on fourth down, and then they were followed by punts.
Yeah.
So you don't really need to call a timeout to punt the ball.
No. Don't understand his timeouts. I mean, you know, there are only so many situations that can come up. You have a little chart that helps you based on time, score, down, and distance.
Theoretically, you have that chart.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes.
I wonder, too. I just don't know. It's puzzling,
You
know. And this is his fourth year, so in that regard, he hasn't gotten any better. And you could make the case that since he still shuffles quarterbacks, mismanages scholarships, that he hasn't gotten better in any regard as a head football coach.
Yeah, and this is the first year that Jeff Long has got to see this up close. And obviously, he's not there every day, but he's getting a lot of information from Mike Vollmer, who he hired just for that very reason, to kind of track the program and see what's being done correctly and what can be helped out and that type of thing. So,
not much is escaping Jeff Long here because he has Mike Vollmer, who nothing is escaping him, and he's passing it all along, and they're joined at the hip. It's they know exactly what's going on better than we do. I mean, they know exactly what the scholarship situation is, and They're going to hire a new football coach at the end of the season at the latest. So,
yeah, you see them talking on the sidelines before and after every football game, I think. I think since he's come on, I've spotted them at some point. Sometimes before the game, and then after the game, it's usually, you know, closer to the locker room or in a tunnel or something. But they're always in contact, and Jeff Long is doing a great job of just keeping track of everything that's going on with the program. Right. So I think the KU fans that are frustrated, probably helpful to know that.
Yes.
This next question is from Rachel, I'm going to say, Boy. I hope I pronounced your last name somewhere in the neighborhood of correct. Is the first FBS road win in 9 years enough to keep Beatty for next year, or is he out if and when we don't win again this season? So
yeah, I think that's not an either or, because I think he's out either way.
Yeah,
you get an FBS road win, he's still out.
Yeah.
They're talking about Central Michigan, I guess.
Yeah. She was wondering if is that enough, or is he gonna, does he need a win here in the, because they haven't won since Rutgers, so
right.
Do you need another win?
I don't even think another win is going to save his job. No, I definitely don't.
What if they win five in a row?
Five in a row, yes.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if anything else will.
There are five games left now, so absolutely he would be 7-5.
Yeah.
6-6 would do it. I'm going to say 4 out of 5 would do it.
Yeah, it's just tough after the next three weeks.
Well, yeah. Would 3 out of 5 do it? If he wins each of the next 3 weeks.
Wow.
And he's 5-7. And you're facing another short.
It's easily the best season since Mangino left.
Yeah.
This is a fantasy world that we're describing. But I guess you'd have to, it'd be a longer decision process.
Yep.
But it seems to, I don't know.
Tougher call.
Yeah.
And then what would weigh against him is that he again has a short. They're short of scholarships next year.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, one Big 12 win isn't going to do it. One Big 12 road win isn't going to do it. It's going to take something pretty miraculous here.
I don't think 4-8 is going to do it.
No.
I'll say 5-7, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what we said maybe before the season.
Or, maybe.
Yeah, 5-7 maybe.
I think 5-7 would do it, now that I think of it.
Okay.
He'd be back with 5-7.
Question from Marcus Collette.
How are they going to go 5-7?
I know. That's tough.
Go ahead. Sorry.
How bad is KU going to throttle Emporia Thursday night? So he had already moved on to the basketball season. Yeah.
Badly.
Number one KU versus Emporia State. We're actually recording this right before going over there. So by the time this is up, you might know the answer to that question. This question from William Graham. Is the player position evaluation available to the public? Do the players have a chance to fill in the boxes? There seems to be a coaching bias towards certain players. So I don't know. I mean, like, the coaches are very tight-lipped about what they think of players in general and their ability to, I mean, there's obviously certain guys that they like, but those biases don't necessarily come out, and we don't get to talk to assistant coaches or coordinators anymore, so it's hard to get a real good feel about how the staff feels about certain players, because Beatty doesn't talk for very long, and a lot of things that he says about players you got to take with a grain of salt. So yeah. It's hard to get a really good grasp other than watching the game and just
seeing who they play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But I do think that Meacham must have been down on Charlotte.
It seems that way.
And you got to hand it to Beatty for playing Charlotte. You hear me say that often, you got to hand it to Beatty, but that's just because I want to make sure that people know that I'm balanced when it comes to the coverage of David Beatty.
This question is from Bryn Park, and she asks, when is enough enough? When will someone in the KU athletic department do something, not just say something?
Well, I don't know. You know, Jeff Long isn't a big believer in interim coaches, so.
Yeah, and didn't you call that back in July or whatever when he was officially announced?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you did a little research and it didn't seem that that would be coming. And he's had opportunities this year to make a change in season.
Oh, definitely. You know, the bye week was a natural one. The last game, how poorly that went, was another one. Now, maybe there's a reason you want to do it with 2 weeks left so that you can just flat out talk to people, you know, and let him coach the rest of the season, or let him, you know, an interim like Clint Bowen, Bill Miller, coach the final two games. So it still could happen. But I don't think that there's a real urgency there, because the whole key is getting it right. Getting the next hire right.
Right.
And I don't think that whether they have an interim or not is a huge factor in that.
Next question from Kip Royalhawk. I'm guessing that's not Kip's real name, but he's in Kip Royalhawk is his Twitter name. Makes zero sense to continue down this path when recruiting is being stifled by the looming decision at the end of the season. Why not rip the Band-Aid off and let the new guy get some commits before everyone is locked up? And this is kind of tricky too, because you're not necessarily going to be able to land your next head coach during the season.
The odds are way astronomical against being able to land during the season. That doesn't happen unless it's like a Les Miles.
Right.
And if Les Miles is the guy, I would totally agree. Just do it now. And whether he coaches the team the rest of the year or
wouldn't
just
really
hands
matter.
It over to an interim and says, I'm hitting the recruiting trail.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the key. So the fact that
I think it's
that
safe to say that Les Miles has not said he would definitely like to coach this team.
Right.
Or that would have just happened.
Yeah.
There would be no reason to wait.
Exactly, because he's not employed. Brett Bielema is employed by the Patriots. The chances are this is going to come from the hire will be an existing head coach who's in the middle of his season. He's not going to leave in mid-season.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you've written about this too. Like, it needs to be a head coach. Not an up-and-coming
normally I don't like to limit the pool, but it absolutely has to be a head coach. Your staff is in place. You hit the ground running. And we see what can happen when you hire an assistant coach. Sometimes it works out, like Mark Mangino,
mm-hmm.
but very often it doesn't work out. And in the last, you know, Beatty was never really a coordinator. He was for one season. Nobody ever hired Turner Gill to be a coordinator. He didn't become a coordinator until he was at Buffalo and decided to appoint himself as the offensive coordinator. So, that's the, you know, if you're going to hire an assistant, which I'm against, you hire someone with a great deal of coordinating experience.
Yeah, yeah. Or someone with, someone who's been a coordinator at a major program and for some reason is interested in this opening. Something
right.
like that. A question from Alex Burton. If not just because he's earned it, do you think Beatty will get the axe soon because we have one recruit for next year? And no kids.
You're right. Very good.
And no kids are going to commit to a coach they know won't be around when they get there. So, yeah, this is, I mean, basically the heart of this question is, like, does it help your recruiting to go ahead and cut the cord? And again, I think it's a tricky situation.
Yeah, I don't think it does when you don't know who the next coach is going to be. But I think if it helps Jeff Long to announce the new coach the day after the season is over, if cutting him loose with 2 weeks left helps that, then you do it.
Yeah.
No questions asked. You save a little bit of money because he's making 1.6, so it's probably, I wrote this, the amount, I think it's like $80,000 a week or $40,000 a week that you save, because it's divided by 52.
Mm.
1.6 divided by 52 would be like $80,000 a week, right? 1.6 million?
I'm not good
like
enough
that.
At math to do that off the top of my head, but that sounds okay. Wow, Blind Justice is just coming through with so many questions this week. Since Beatty fired the second OC midseason and again named himself OC, if, however unlikely, he was retained, what self-respecting OC would ever come here? So, if Beatty was back next year, how would he possibly find an offensive
that's
coordinator?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
The answer is nobody.
No. Yeah. He would have, like, if by some bizarre set of circumstances Beatty is back next year,
Garrett Riley would probably be looking elsewhere, though, don't you think?
Yeah.
And with his connections, he'd probably land elsewhere.
Yeah. I think he knows the head coach at Oklahoma somehow. I can't remember how he knows.
But I don't think Oklahoma's going down that road.
Yeah,
Mike Stoops.
Neither. Yeah.
Because of the Bob Stoops, Mike Stoops
thing. But yeah, that's the only name that I could... That was the first name that came to my head was, well, if somehow Beatty was back here next year, maybe Garrett Riley would be the offensive coordinator.
And the reason that comes to my head, because we've already thought of what if Beatty were fired in midseason, who would be the offensive coordinator? Garrett Riley.
Yep.
Just call up Lincoln and say, okay, how do I do this? No, he knows how to do it. He's from the same family. They grew up in a football family. At the dinner table, they're using salt shakers and pepper shakers to design plays, and forks and knives and spoons.
I think this is our last question from Blind Justice, but the fourth question.
That's redundant, isn't it? If it's true justice, it's always going to be blind.
Yeah, but it's a long-standing.
It is a long-standing thing. Yeah. Maybe it's just reminding people that justice is blind.
Yes. Beatty's issue with OCs is actually his issue with QBs. Like, he has some secret vision of how the offense should look. He doesn't communicate well, so things inevitably go awry. He gets angry and blames the QB, OC, for not seeing his vision. It's illogical, but that's his MO. So this is more just his critique of Beatty than a question.
You know what, though? You know why I wish you weren't reading these Blind Justice questions? He is so much smarter than we are. It's not even funny. That was perfectly put.
Yeah.
He had to have been a coach who also is a writer. So try to think of who that would be. I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
John Gruden?
It's not John Gruden. He's having issues with the Raiders.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, no kidding.
They're the Raiders.
This question from, this is a great name, Dion Sandals. When does our AD, and he uses some words that I probably won't repeat here, but when does our AD fire Beatty is this question. Last time I checked, we only have one commitment for the class of 2019. So a lot of people are interested in this particular topic. And I don't know, it seemed to me that after they went to the bye week without making a move, it feels like they're going to keep Beatty around throughout the season, would be my best guess. But you mentioned earlier, they could decide with maybe 2 weeks left to...
Only if they think that allows them to hire the next guy sooner. But you still can't talk to the next guy. You can reach out through third parties to find out. So it probably wouldn't be right after the season. They'd have to make it look good. It'd be 5 days or something.
Yeah. Matt asks, what on earth did Carter Stanley do to David Beatty? This team has zero chance of getting the offense going. When does Long drop the axe? So let's focus on the Carter Stanley part.
Yeah. Since every question is about when does Long drop the axe.
Yeah. What on earth did Carter Stanley do to David Beatty? And this is basically referencing, Stanley started at West Virginia when he played not even through the first quarter and was pulled for a couple of mistakes. They were definitely bad mistakes, but they went away with him so quickly.
Yeah, he gets a way shorter leash. I don't know. Maybe they... I don't know what the deal is.
But let's use this as kind of a jumping off point for this week's game against TCU. Who would you guess is the quarterback? Because it could be any of the three of them.
Right. I drove up, by the way, on the way from the Sprint Center to Allen Fieldhouse. I drove up to try to see if I could see who was practicing. I don't think they were practicing then, but I couldn't get a glimpse because I wanted to see who was taking
the
snaps.
Drive by the practice fields.
Yeah, and that was a fruitless exercise, but I'm confessing that I did try. Just because Beatty says that Kendrick is healthy doesn't mean he's healthy. But if he happens to be telling the truth about that, I'm going to say Myles Kendrick will start. What do you say?
I would agree. I would say if he is healthy, which I think he might be, he's been working out. He's there was a couple of weeks ago where I was walking over to for some interviews and stuff, and some of the quarterbacks were starting to gather for a little training session outside, just some conditioning stuff. I talked to somebody who walked by not long after me, and looked like Myles Kendrick was fully healthy then, and this was maybe 3 weeks ago at this point. So if Myles Kendrick is healthy, well, I mean, why not, right? We haven't seen him other than like, right. those brief cameos for a play or a series or that type of thing. The offense would definitely be kind of this dumbed down version, I think, because that was what one of the biggest things that they referenced when they talked about limiting Myles Kendrick earlier in the year, was that he just didn't have a grasp for the whole playbook. Well, if you're making everything simple, that should be the best case for him.
Yeah. And even though he's not as fast as Carter Stanley, he may be a better runner. He might cut better. Yeah. He's thicker. He's I was going to say less prone to injury, but he did get injured.
Yeah. So I feel like it could easily be any of the three, but I guess from a story standpoint, I hope it's Myles Kendrick, because that'd be something different to write.
It would be something different.
Yeah.
You know, and this could be a case of KU finding out that they have a great quarterback before he goes to Boise State or Virginia Tech. I'm not going to say those guys were great, but they're certainly better than when they were here.
We'll take one more question real quick, and then we'll wrap this thing up. This is a good one from Nate Anderson. Assuming a change at head coach is in the works, and it very well should be, Nate adds, what are some names that will inevitably surface, and what are your thoughts on them? And Tom, you've kind of been tracking this for the past few months, just kind of some possibilities. I mean, obviously the name that fans seem to clamor for is Les Miles, but we don't know how realistic that actually is. What's kind of your take? You did a fun lunch break entry this week about coaches that Jeff Long follows on Twitter.
Yes.
What was the most intriguing thing that you discovered through that?
You know, Jeff Tedford was an interesting name. He's a West Coast guy through and through, but his turnaround at Fresno State is unbelievable. And also at Cal, he did a good job before and after him. Bad records. When he was there, good record.
Yeah.
Except his final year, he was 3-9. So Jeff Tedford's an excellent football coach. And that has to be the first question you ask. Is this guy a good football coach?
Right.
Yes. The guy I have to confess I had never heard of was Chip Long. I believe his name is Chip, the first name. He's Notre Dame offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And he had been offensive coordinator one or two seasons elsewhere when Notre Dame hired him. Guru, but he's an assistant coach. But that doesn't mean that Jeff Long has the same stance on not hiring an assistant that you and I have.
Right.
And I don't think he's related. Same last name.
But yeah, that would be intriguing, wouldn't it? If some hot up-and-coming coordinator was actually interested in this job.
Yeah.
I guess the difficult potential thing there is, like, it seems like a young coach who came here and like had success, like, no way you'd stick around much longer, right?
That wouldn't bother me. Yeah. But what would bother me is that he made the decision to take this job.
Yeah.
You know, because on the one hand you'd say that's courageous of him, but is it wise of him? And it would be courageous. Maybe he just has that much belief in himself. But the most interesting name that Jeff Long follows is a name we've already discussed here, and that's Dave Doran.
Yeah.
I found that interesting. Dave Doran campaigned for this job twice.
Twice.
Once when it went to Charlie Weiss, and once when it went to maybe Turner Gill even.
Wow.
I think he was a Wisconsin defensive coordinator at the time.
Okay.
And he was making some calls here. And then again, when Charlie Weiss, and I wrote a column saying this has got to be the man when they hired Charlie Weiss. And you notice I only bring up the columns that end up making me look smart.
Well, the other ones are, I mean, why would you remember them at this point? You've written so many things.
There are no other ones.
Well, on that note, we'll go ahead and wrap this up. We have to go to a fake basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse. It doesn't count for anything, but there will be, we'll get to see Diedrich Lawson play in a somewhat real setting, which we haven't really done before.
Is that correct pronunciation? Before I see him watch a somewhat official game, because we saw him play in the summer. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Great question.
Speaking of correct pronunciations, is it Diedrich? Is it Dedrick?
I think it's Diedrich.
Okay.
I could be totally wrong.
Was by him at Media Day.
In Kansas City.
Smart guy.
Yeah, he enjoyed that setting, it seemed.
Yeah.
He didn't mind talking for 50 minutes or whatever it was.
Right.
But, we will be at David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium on Saturday for KUTCU, and of course we'll have you covered on all bases for that, and we will reconvene for another KU football podcast next week, and I'm sure you'll have more questions about future coaches and things that Beatty has done and that type of thing. But thanks for listening to this episode, and we'll talk to you again real soon.